Hello, this is Janet Gallen welcoming you to Love Letters Live. And love letters, you know, are for anybody at any time. You have something positive to say, a memory, an invitation, a hello, a goodbye, anything at all. Do it in writing, stamp it and mail it, make somebody else's life richer. And gratitude taken to the grave really doesn't serve anybody. Okay, today's guest is Damon Krall, who's an actor, and we've just met, and we've only talked for about 5 minutes, and I'm already having far too much fun, so I'm gonna go to you, and tell me, the name Damon Krall is spelled unusually, so
yes.
You said it was Dutch.
My first name, Damon, is spelled D-A-A-M-E-N, uh-huh. And it is Dutch. It was my mother's maiden name. My grandfather came from Holland with two small children and his wife in 1914 and had...
To Los Angeles?
To Iowa, actually.
Iowa, okay.
And he emigrated there, mm-hmm. and had one more child, my mother, mm-hmm. and then they had no more children, so there were no boys in the family. He had three daughters,
uh-huh.
and they wanted the name to continue, so
nice.
They gave it to me as a first name.
Oh, very nice. Mm-hmm. And so you were born here. Where were you born?
What? In Los Angeles.
But what hospital were you born at?
Queen of Angels.
Okay. And you said you lived in South Central, which meant what then?
Well, that was just south of downtown in the central part of the city.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very blue-collar area,
mm-hmm.
Lots of factories and things like
uh-huh.
that.
Uh-huh.
There was along Slauson Avenue, a train line, actually,
yeah.
which served to take the goods out of those factories
uh-huh.
that were in the area. And when that went out, when the railroad pulled out,
mm-hmm.
all those factories closed.
Oh, then there were people left with no jobs.
There
all
was
of
so
a
much
sudden.
Discontent.
Oh,
and 1965,
yes.
the summer broke.
Right.
And we know what happened. But that was one of the main causes. People were just left without anything.
That's a really good cause to be angry.
Yes, yes,
mm-hmm.
they were. And it was a terribly hot summer like it is right now.
Yes, well.
And that was the moment we had actually just moved out of South Central and moved up the coast of Ventura, which is where then
beautiful.
I went to high school and started college
yes.
up there.
And now you live?
Now I live in Toluca Lake here in the San Fernando Valley.
From one beautiful place to another.
It's very lovely there.
Yes.
I do love it.
So when did you know you... wanted to be, I mean, the way you're smiling and you look like a satisfied, happy human being, that you must have had support from parents for things you wanted to do in life?
Oh, my parents were very supportive. Of course, they were taken aback when I said, going out of high school, that I was going to study theater. And
after you left, you finished high school?
I finished high school,
okay.
of course. But, you know, I did high school plays and things like
uh-huh.
that, and I just really enjoyed that and found a niche to put myself into.
What was that?
And as an actor.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And the theater department at Ventura College in those days, in the late 60s,
mm-hmm.
was fantastic. Two PhDs in a junior college department,
mm-hmm.
a costume designer from Vogue,
uh-huh.
and a set designer that was a watercolorist as well, who had exhibited all over the world.
Well, Ventura was a fairly sophisticated place in many ways,
yes.
rather early.
Oh, yes. Yes.
I just happened to have learned that not so long ago.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
So I was able to start at the junior college there and just live at home. So when I hear about these college loans that young kids come out with now,
the debt.
I'm appalled.
Yes.
I'm just appalled at the six figures
right.
that I hear them have to pay back.
And the truth of the matter is, I think, that for a lot of people who feel obligated to go through college because that's kind of an entree into a lot, and it is to many things,
yes.
but a lot of things it isn't.
That's true.
So why do they yes.
But it also, I believe college is a very important, at least for 2 years, 4 years best, because it's not only an education, it's a social education. It socializes you when you are becoming an adult,
mm-hmm.
and as opposed to not going when you're forced out into the workforce at a very young age, and you don't have maybe that opportunity, or maybe it's very limited. A college education, I believe, is very important on many, many levels,
mm-hmm.
to learn your craft,
yes.
Whatever that may be, but also to learn about people.
Yes,
and
good
to
point.
Start the whole inquisition of your life, because I believe... till the day you die, you must be inquisitive.
Oh, yes.
And find out what's going on.
Yes.
Why is that happening? And
although that's kind of a genetic gift, I think, too, to
sometimes,
some degree.
Sometimes.
Yes.
Just the curiosity.
So what was next for you?
Well, then I had the 2 years there. I transferred down to UC Irvine in Orange County. And at the same time...
What year was that?
1970. 71.
Okay. I didn't know how long UC Irvine had been there.
It was brand new.
Yeah, I think so. It must have been, yes.
When I was there, the trees were little saplings.
Oh, okay.
And I went down not too long ago and into a beautiful campus of big, lush, overgrown trees. And I thought, wow, how things have changed. But in the meantime, that summer, from the transition from junior college to the university, the guy that taught acting at Ventura College was from South Dakota.
Mm-hmm.
And he went every summer to the Black Hills Playhouse in Custer State Park in South Dakota. And he said to me, I think a year in summer stock would be good for you. So with my parents' blessing, I got in the car and drove to South Dakota and spent the next 20 summers there.
Oh, okay. So it was wonderful. So you just kept going back to take parts in plays.
I originally started as a student there because it was affiliated with the University of South Dakota. Then I became a director. I became the costume designer and acted in the shows. And it was very lovely. I became at one point an associate professor at the university.
So your whole life just opened up in the very field you wanted.
Very much so. Sure. And then I went, I spent 1 year at UC Irvine, and I decided I really wanted to go back to South Dakota. So the next summer I went to the Playhouse and then transferred to the University of South Dakota, who they were very gracious about giving me in-state tuition and things like that. And then actually stayed and did a master's degree there.
So you're huge in your field. I mean, you've done a great deal. What are your favorite kind of? I mean, you like theater better than film?
At this point, no. Uh-huh. I really have transitioned over to film now.
How did that work?
It was a rough transition. Uh-huh. I was not trained in making films. The acting,
the acting itself
was
different.
Uh-huh. And I wasn't so used to it. But with
what's
a
different?
Lot of
what's
coaching,
different?
The intimacy of it. Standing on a stage with, you know, 1,000 people in front of you, you play a little different than when the camera
but
is
you,
right
but
in
you
your face.
But you speak lines differently? You have to...
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah. The delivery is totally different. And it's intimacy.
Well, you can tell that the delivery is different because sometimes you see a movie on television and you can tell it's a play.
Yes.
And it shouldn't be done as a movie. It's flat.
Exactly.
Whereas it's
the actor's part and the director to watch this, that the actor plays it as an intimate... as we're talking back and forth right now, as opposed to being on a stage.
Yes.
Declaiming.
You have
the
to reach
lines,
people different
right,
ways. Yeah.
Right.
So who helped you with that?
Oh, a lot of different directors through the years. But when I came here to Los Angeles, I came because of my family. My father was ill very young and passed on when I was young. And so it left my mother and my brothers and sisters were here. So I decided to just stay in Los Angeles as opposed to go to New York to pursue a theater career. So I came here and pursued an acting career in the theater and on stage as well, what little there was here. But I fell into something that was very interesting for me because I was asked to do what is called ADR, Automated Dialogue Replacement.
What is that?
You go into a studio after the film is made and you either replace someone's dialogue in their, put the words back in their mouth.
In your voice.
In my voice.
How do they feel about that?
Well, that's part of the contract. If it's a major star, they're going to do their own. But if it's a under five line person, they really have nothing to say about it. A lot of people have been, their dialogue has been replaced by someone else. You might hire a great.
Because your voice is better or?
Different. It sounds like the person they think the person should sound. Or there was a problem in the recording. What they record on the set isn't always perfect. There could be a jet fly over, but the scene is good.
Uh-huh.
So most of the movies that you watch, the dialogue is re-recorded.
So
they have absolutely perfect control over it. And then we would do all kinds of little things, like we would be in a party. And in the background are 50 extras having a wonderful time at a party. Now on the set, those extras aren't making any noise because it would be too disconcerting to the actors that are trying to do the scene. So they're very quiet and they're just moving their mouths as if they're talking and having a great time. And then we, as a group, watch that and make that look like they're doing something. So we either pick them out individually, we see somebody laugh and we give them a laugh, or we give them dialogue all the way through it, speaking appropriate lines that would be spoken in that scene. Now that was always very interesting because they would call me and
So it would be you and another 10 people?
Sure, approximately. And, you know, out of that 10 people, we would get up one at a time and do whatever we were going to do. Little lip smacks when people kiss. When people used to smoke on the screen, we had to have that the sound of the cigarette coming off their lips, that little stick, you know. kind of thing, and the blow of smoke. I remember in the X-Files, if you recall that show, there was a character called Cancer Man, and he smoked continually. And that's what I did. I did a raspy voice and exhale of smoke for Cancer Man throughout that series.
So voice actors
mm-hmm.
have a whole world in addition to what I think I know, but I never heard of. That is so...
Yeah. And it's an interesting thing because when
I'm glad you're talking because I'm just mute.
When we're doing that is in post-production.
Sure.
And while we're doing our recording, they're doing the credits someplace else. So consequently, very seldom do you see us in the credits. More so now than you used to. You might see who cast us, but you will now see sometimes the actors' names as well. But as I've gotten older now, I've sort of backed up from that a little bit. Hollywood is a young man's town, and they see my white hair, and it just
looks... but because you still got the voice.
But you know what? That if a young director sees me, and I look old to him, and that's fine. I knew this would happen. I am not grousing about it one bit. I'm fine with the way my career happened. But they think I'm too old. They'll say, no, you need someone younger for that one.
Even though my voice is
the same.
Yes. Okay. You just touched on something.
Mm-hmm.
Because... trends in speaking do change.
Absolutely.
Yes. And how we pronounce things. I mean, I hear things on commercials, excuse me, sometimes, that just bring me, straight up in my chair. And it's I told my bus friend, It's not best, it's bust. And there are lots of pronunciations
exactly,
that have changed. It's not that you look old. Maybe it is, but that actually the way we speak mm-hmm. is different.
Exactly.
That's kind of legitimate.
But even if we were doing, say, a period piece about the Second Continental Congress
mm-hmm.
and young Alexander Hamilton had to be replaced, they would say, I'm too old to do that.
Oh, young Alexander Hamilton would probably be very lucky to have your voice. But anyway, okay.
I was doing a mini-series years ago about George Washington mm-hmm. and the Continental Congress. And it showed the character of George Washington walking up to the Congress building in Liberty Hall in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
And the windows were open, and they wanted to hear someone filibustering up in the top floor that he was listening to coming down. And everyone just looked at me and said, okay, Damon, you get up there and do that. So I had to, off the top of my head,
uh-huh.
create a filibuster that would have been correct for 1776.
How did you manage to do that?
I don't know, but uh-huh. I did it. I spoke for a minute and a half about the taxes and the representation and the tea and whatever I could get out of my history training years ago.
Yes.
So... that was this career of mine was very interesting because it wasn't using dialogue that was written for us.
Mm-hmm.
This was usually improvisational stuff, but we had to be appropriate to what we were doing.
Really?
If we were told, now you're going to be in a surgery, doing open heart surgery.
Screaming.
We needed to know what that sounded like. What did those doctors say? So sometimes we'd call a doctor and say, could you talk to me just for a minute and tell me a little bit? What words do you use? And they would tell you. Sometimes we'd have to do the airport control towers. And so usually the ladies would call the airport control towers and say, give us some buzzwords. What are you talking
like?
I'm so
impressed with the authenticity reached for.
I have a very dear friend of mine that I went to high school. She's also works as a voice actress. And she's very well known in most movies doing those police calls that you hear in the background. And she used to sit and listen to a scanner, police scanner,
now,
and she'd listen to the calls.
How did she get known for that? I mean, how do you...
Because she could do it. She would get up and just start doing it. I was always well known to do train station announcements, usually in period pieces. So, for some
reason...
Because
once you're good at something, people will call you for that
right,
same thing.
Or a horse race track announcer. I
can
did
see
that kind
that.
Of stuff.
Yeah.
So it was a very, very interesting career. And now, as I move into the next part of my life, I'm doing something very, very interesting. Back in my high school days, I was fascinated by the idea of dramatic radio. And in the late 60s, it was pretty much done.
Gone.
That period of radio was over, and it was just news. And I think maybe one dramatic show was still on the air, but it came back in the 80s with the CBS Mystery Theater, which I used to love to listen to, and I thought, oh, I would love to do something like that. So my wish came true. I was performing on stage one night with a musician friend of mine doing some readings, mm-hmm. and the next day I got a message on Facebook mm-hmm. that asked me if I was interested in doing some radio shows.
Now, who sent you that?
A very wonderful man and woman named John Alzadek and Dana Perry Hayes.
And they were producers of this?
Yes, uh-huh. And they're writers. And they decided to bring back the radio show Suspense, which was like the Twilight Zone of its day. Mm-hmm. And it played on radio from the 30s.
So are you using those original scripts?
Some. We have mm-hmm. redone some with rewrites and also some of their original scripts. We're in our second season now, and I believe we are heard on radio in every continent.
Well, where? What station? Where do we?
If you go to bluehoursproductions.com and look for
you.
The station.
And by the way,
in
a
your
shout
area.
Out to Facebook.
Fabulous. For,
well, isn't it though? But that they found you and asked you if you'd like to do this on Facebook.
Right.
This is great.
Yeah, it was you know, anonymous. I mean, there was no way they could get to me if I didn't want them to. But
right.
they could leave me a message.
Yes.
I could have chosen to ignore it.
Right.
I didn't. I asked them to send me a script. And the original stuff they were doing was As Night Falls was the name of the original production.
And what's yours called now?
Suspense.
Oh, I see.
And
I thought you were doing that as an adjective. That's actually
no,
the title.
No, that's the title of it,
okay.
Suspense. And these were shows of great suspense on the radio
yeah.
back in the day. And every famous Hollywood actor appeared on this show. So I am the host. I am the announcer, the host. And I also perform in some of the scripts.
Now, I remember
that we
do. As a girl, there was one called Helen Trent.
No, that was a soap opera. The Romance of Helen Trent.
Okay. Well, that's the only thing I used to listen to once in a while if I was homesick.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to tell you, there was one scene that was so terrifying. And the reason I'm mentioning this is to ask you, do you think because you can't see anybody and it's only sound that you can reach a level of terror if you want to and suspense?
Mm, absolutely.
That you can't anywhere else.
Your imagination is much better than any CGI thing that could be created on film.
Yeah, yeah.
The darkened room listening to someone's voice talk about
yes.
something and your imagination taking
yes.
over.
Mm-hmm.
Before television, we had to do that.
Right.
I mean, that was
right.
that was the only thing. We could go to the movies, but at our own homes, we were used to the spoken word.
Yes.
And for so many years during the 80s and the 90s and the early 2000s, the spoken word had fallen away. People were not used to listening. They could listen to about 5 minutes. But now, with podcasts, people are becoming used to listening to people speaking and not having to see them. And it's reigniting, I believe.
So the voice and what's being said takes your whole being. You're not distracted
absolutely.
By anything
right.
else. Is that what you're...
Mm-hmm. And it's just everything. People have to be used to something.
Yes.
You know, and when they're getting used to it. Now, young people especially started listening to podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, God bless things like YouTube where they can put stuff up and
yes.
iTunes and things like that. You mm-hmm. can put these podcasts up and anybody can listen to them. The other thing I'm doing with my partner is we have a little production company, and we did a short film about 5 years ago with David Zimmerman,
mm-hmm.
and he acted with me in it. I produced it, and Robert Shelby wrote it and
what
directed
was it.
It was called Hyde, and it was about two older men who were married
mm-hmm.
who meet each other on the internet and fall in love.
Oh, they're married to each other people.
To wives.
Oh, I thought you meant to each other.
No, they were married to wives, and they meet on the internet and fall in love. And the crux of the film is, what should they do? Do
sure.
they tell their wives? Do they stay in this closet? Do they hide? It's a very interesting film. We were in probably, I don't know, 15 or 16 film festivals.
It's a very interesting predicament.
It was. This
yeah.
was actually based on a true story
sure.
when Robert wrote it. So he said, would you be in it? And I said, sure. So we
nice.
Ended up doing it. We put our own money into it and did it. Won several awards all over the country. And
can we see clips of that on YouTube?
It's on it's on Amazon streaming video. You can actually rent it.
And, okay. I'm going to do that.
I think it's a dollar or something like
okay.
that to rent it.
Yes.
And it's called Hyde. So we're now in
wait,
production.
So I don't want to ask you what they did because I'll go watch it.
Oh,
okay.
yeah. I'm not going
right.
to give the secret away.
No.
We're now in production, in post-production, actually. For a web series that Robert wrote, and this is a very ambitious project, which is why it's taking us a long time to do it. He wrote this piece, and it's quite fascinating. I love the script. And I said, all right, we'll produce it. I mm-hmm. said, we don't have a lot of money. Mm-hmm. He said, I don't think we'll need a lot of money. We shot the whole thing on an iPhone.
Oh, my goodness.
With lenses great. That were attached to it.
So you're very good at the technical here.
He is. Okay. I am not so technical, but he okay. is. Now, he has got all of his footage, and he is editing. And,
on an iPhone.
And putting the music to it. And doing all of this. In fact, one of your guests that's coming in, I saw Joshua.
Oh, Tate.
No, Joshua.
Oh, Wingate. Yes.
Is in it. He's one of
okay.
our actors.
Okay. Oh, goody. Mm-hmm. This is a morning that's making more sense every
yeah,
time I turn around.
Yeah, so it's in, as I say, post-production right now. And we're hoping that by the end of the year we'll have it ready
you know,
to
I'm so glad
go up online.
I'm so glad we're having this little chat. Because I think what people get out of this, certainly what I do, are possibilities in life. Possibilities. That's along with being inquisitive, goes paying attention to possibilities that are glorious. Filming a movie with an iPhone. Mm-hmm. Now, it could be that people listening to this who never knew this and have the desire and the ability to make a movie
exactly.
can now look into this.
Mm-hmm. It's
I'm just blown away.
The possibility. Well, look what you're doing.
True.
With a computer.
Yes.
If you wanted to do a radio show back in the day, in our day.
I did one, and you had to go to a
You had to be in a studio.
Uh-huh.
I mean, this yeah. is rather portable, and you can move
oh,
this where
wonderful.
You want to.
And it's, yes.
And with the young people now, I told Robert when we did Hyde, I said, this is amazing to me because you can edit on the computer, you can do the music on the computer, everything
yes,
is done on the
yes.
computer. In the old days when I was in college, if I wanted to do a short film, it would have cost a fortune. We would have had to get cameras, film stock, developing, everything, editing.
Yes.
Everything had to be jobbed out
of
somewhere.
Of course.
Now one person, Bobby, Robert, is doing all of this himself.
What's Bobby's background? How did he learn it?
He went to film school in San Jose. That's where he's from.
But then, of course, people learn different things in school now. You'll learn how to do these.
Of course. I mean, it's all technical. You have to keep ahead
yes.
of the game. But it's wonderful, and I just think it's great for young people that they have all these opportunities.
Yeah, I do too. What do you think is going to be next in your world?
Gosh, I don't know.
I mean, you say a web series. Why don't you tell what a web series is for those of us like me who don't know, actually?
This is 14 episodes, which are probably 5 to 7 minutes each in length.
Mm-hmm.
So if you put it all together, it's feature film length.
Right.
But we will put it up on the internet on a website, which is yet to be determined, but you know,
one installation at a time. So.
Well, actually, we'll put it all up at the same time. I have a feeling,
oh,
kind
so
of like House of Cards,
oh, uh-huh.
so you can watch from one episode to the next. So there's always a little cliffhanger kind of thing at the end of each
episode.
And
how will we know when this is up and running?
Well, it'll go on Facebook. I mean, we'll just have to use our social
okay.
media for the most part to keep people informed. We'll put our page up and get people to join that page and have them disseminate information, and hopefully, we'll gather a following
uh-huh.
that will, you know, enjoy it. I hope.
I have a feeling enthusiasm like yours will be contagious enough to do a lot.
It's what we did with Hyde as well. And I, when we did play at the film festivals, it was very interesting. People from my past that just happened to live in that area would turn up. And they'd seen it on Facebook or something like that, because I always posted
yes.
when we were going to be somewhere. We went to Santa Fe, and
great.
I walked down the aisle of the theater, and a young lady or older middle-aged lady looked up at me and said, "Hello, Damon, you don't know who I am, do you?" And it was a girl I'd gone to college with
oh.
in South Dakota, who happened to live there.
Yes.
So it was great fun.
Wait, she recognized you, but you didn't recognize her?
Well, she had seen my picture,
oh,
and she
okay.
had just watched my film,
I
and
see.
I was
oh,
in
oh,
it.
Oh, I missed
so,
that part. I'm sorry, yes.
So, yes.
I thought that was before. Okay.
No.
Yes, yes, yes.
So she knew who I was.
Well, you're also, not to make you blush, if it does, it doesn't matter because it's not television. You are exceptionally memorable looking.
Well, thank you. Thank
my
you
goodness.
So much.
I mean, I was just delighted when you walked in. I said, oh, I'm so happy for Facebook because I know
yes,
what you look like
exactly.
walking
Isn't
in.
Isn't that fun?
It familiarizes the world.
I think it's the best thing in the world.
I do, too.
I love it. I've connected with people. Well, for example, from my Playhouse days, usually students came in and out of there one or two summers, and then they would go off and do their lives and their
right.
careers. And so you would have a very intimate time with them for a couple of years and then maybe never hear from them again. And when I put myself on Facebook, all of a sudden people started coming out of the woodwork
yes.
that I hadn't even thought of in years, saying, oh, I can't believe, I want to be your friend on Facebook.
Okay, so can I make a transition to love letters
sure.
at just this perfect segue point? And that is to say the people who have dropped out of your life and were important for a couple of years. And now we have Facebook. But we also have, okay, if you were to write a love letter right now, who would it be to? I mean, I can think of like 15 people from what you just said.
Actually,
do you write letters?
I write emails. I hardly ever sit down on with stationery anymore and write a letter out or type anything. Mm-hmm. But I do send a lot of emails. I think the love letter I would send would be to John and Dana, who do the radio show, because it was to pull me out of the hat like that was so neat and so wonderful. And they've been very loving and supportive.
So you say if you were to write when you would, can we put that into present tense?
I guess I would. I mean, it's more of a, besides being a love letter, it's more like a thank you.
That's what love letters are.
Right.
Often.
It's a thank you for opening up a whole new area of my career that, interestingly enough, I'd always wanted to do, but it didn't exist,
okay,
really.
So everything you're saying is the
letter. My love letter. Yeah.
And can I send you home with a homework?
Okay.
Oh, I hope you do it. It'll mean a lot to them because it means a lot to everybody.
Sure.
And they'll have it in your writing, in your handwriting. And as I like to say, you know, in years from now, when they pick that letter up, they'll be touching something that's felt the touch of your hand.
Yes, that's true.
And that's huge.
Mm-hmm.
That's huge. And if they're ever feeling a little bit sad and wondering what, you know, how much they accomplished in life and did they do what they want, they'll read that letter again and ever read it as new, because people do.
Yes, that's true.
Do you ever get letters?
Very seldom anymore. I was actually cleaning out, I'm having some construction and remodeling done at my home,
mm-hmm.
so I was cleaning out a lot of, you know, places that I hadn't looked in for years and years and boxes of things, and I found the last letter that my mother wrote to me.
See, that smile on your face.
Yeah, it was very nice to have that and reread it.
Yes.
And
you can't reread a phone call.
No, you cannot.
And you know, the trouble with email, as much as I love it myself,
mm-hmm.
I'm stuck on it, is that it disappears.
It does.
You know, you can print it out
sure.
on good paper and that'll last. So that's a good thing to do. Mm-hmm. Most people don't.
We did a little kind of letter writing campaign actually for a friend of mine's mother who is 95 years old, extremely active and in incredible shape. But we all wrote letters about how she had impressed us
in her life. Oh, this is just dreamland for me.
And so we wrote them on the computer and then I printed mine out on in a nice font and put it on a card.
And did you sign it in your own?
Yes.
Oh, so that's something. It's, you know, handwriting is king, I think.
Mm-hmm. It's a terrible thing to lose. I understand they don't even teach it cursive writing anymore in schools.
See, I get hives just at the mention of that. I had one guest, her son, 6-year-old, they weren't teaching cursive, and she was very upset.
Yeah.
And she wanted him out. He just was, it was, you know, boring. He was not interested. And then she said to him, this little boy, you know, if you learn to read cursive writing, you will be able to read the secret thoughts of grown-ups.
Well, that's quite a...
Kid was on board.
I bet. Yeah, and it's interesting to watch people sign their names, for example. Sometimes it's like they've gone back to making an X for their name. They just scribble something.
But it's still theirs.
Yes, it's still
theirs.
You know,
now when you go to the market or you get a delivery, you know, a UPS delivery, and you have to sign your name on that little thing.
Oh, right. That's,
uh-huh.
Those are hard.
You come out like a serial killer.
Right.
That handwriting is not you.
No.
And do you know, I'm just going to tell you this, because I'm fascinated by it. The disappearance of handwriting is making crime detection no darn fun.
I bet.
So many things were traceable by handwriting.
And
forgers.
By typewriters, remember?
Yes, I do.
The
yes.
quirks of each typewriter,
yes.
They could trace them.
I once put... Okay, I'm so embarrassed, and I hope I don't go to jail, but I don't think I've ever told you, but the places where you deposit checks
uh-huh.
in the, you know, the automatic, I was just curious, and I endorsed a Queen Elizabeth or something. I stuck it in, and it got deposited.
Of course.
Handwriting, it wasn't her handwriting. I mean, it doesn't matter.
Not with the banks anymore. I mean, they don't even process the checks.
I guess, but it used to be, because I remember once being in college, and I used to have several different handwritings in different
mm-hmm.
moods, just playfully. And I had so many of them. And I went to cash a check. I was like 18, 19, and 18 in Berkeley. And I went to cash a check. And I had use some other handwriting. And, you know, they wouldn't do it. They made me show identification. They showed me my little card, and it wasn't the same.
Right. Well, they when I worked at the Bank of America.
Oh, did you?
My first job when I got out of college and came to Los Angeles and moved here was to work. I needed a job. So my sister worked at the bank, and she called friends of hers and got me a job. And I worked, oh, gosh. This is a long time ago. You remember Wallach's Music City in Hollywood?
Oh, my goodness, of course.
I worked on the bank right across the street. I used to look out the window, and I could see people in the listening booths
Danelle's also.
Yeah. So they had check cashing people, and these were sometimes older folks that, you know, needed a little job, mm-hmm. and it was a little part-time thing, and that's what they did. They sat in a room all day and looked at signatures on checks.
Handwriting. Sure. It meant something. It was you.
Handwriting was right. And I'm very personal. And my problem now is that I don't do it enough, and my handwriting suffers for it.
Sure. But it's, you know, it's still yours.
Yes. Right.
I was telling somebody the other day, I got an actual, you know, kind of a love letter, a thank you for a dinner mm-hmm. party from a man who, just a lovely, lovely human being. And he wrote a thank you note. And I can pretty much read anything. Give me a handwriting, I couldn't read one word, but it was his.
Right.
And it meant something to me. And he was so smart because he knew. And he typed the same thank you note and stapled it to the back.
Oh, how great.
Yeah. So I still got a handwritten note.
Handwriting is very important. My mother was probably about 70. She would be 100 this year. She would have been 100 in June. But when she was 79, she had a pretty massive stroke, unfortunately. Oh. She lived, but it took away her speech and her ability to... It was called expressive aphasia. Mm-hmm. Anything she wanted to express, like handwriting, talking, she could understand us.
Yes.
She could watch television and understand that. She could even read in a book a little bit and figure out what was going on. But she couldn't write. And so when she was in rehab in Santa Barbara, I went there almost every day. And I said, Mom, you have to learn how to sign your name because I've got to get all your money. You've got to sign these checks. And, of course, she laughed hysterically because there was no money. But I figured out a way to do it. And I just, in cursive, wrote her name and in pencil. And I gave her a pen and said, now trace over the top of it.
Aren't you good?
And she traced and traced and traced. And to the day she died, when she was 91, she could still sign her name.
Oh, so that's how children used to learn.
Sure. Now, here's an interesting thing. Right brain, left brain.
Yeah.
Her left brain had been injured. So the writing was very difficult with her right hand. But I put the pencil in her left hand, and she immediately printed her maiden name and spelled my name with the two A's. But printed it. It was the first name she ever learned to mark on a paper. I put it back in her right hand and said, now do that again. And she very falteringly signed her name as her.
How smart of you to have thought of
that. And she put it in her left hand and did it again. But I never could get her to do it after that. That one day where that connection was made. Isn't that funny? But it was a visual
thing.
Well,
it's funny, and it's also very touching that you had that moment with her.
We had a lot of fun in rehab working with things. I eventually brought her to live with me until she passed away here in Burbank. But she had a wonderful life. It was time, and it was a very good thing. I could never picture myself putting her into some kind of facility because she couldn't have told me if something was wrong. And I said, I can take care of her better here at my house.
Wonderful.
And so she had a very, very good life. And my family was wonderful with her. We took her on a cruise every year. And went to far-flung places that she never, ever would have thought of going.
You are not just talented and productive. You're really an angel.
I always say people do what they can do.
Yes, and that saying that is part of probably what makes you an angel.
Maybe.
Oh, thank you so much for doing this with me.
I'm just so glad
I got to know about you.
Thank you. Well, thank you for inviting me in. I was just thrilled quite sure what I was going to be doing.
Wasn't this lovely?
It was lovely. It's lovely having a conversation. Yes. I love just talking with people, and so that's what we've been doing.
Yes, that's exactly all it is. But, you know, in that, you've taught a lot. You've shown a lot. And... possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
Critical.
That's always.
And taking care of your mother and the reasons and, everything about you is just wonderful. I'm so glad. Well, thank you for saying yes to me to do this. Yes is one of my favorite words.
Yes,
and,
too.
Gosh, until next time, this is Janet Gallen saying goodbye. And just to remind you that if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, number one, writing a love letter is a special occasion.
Yes.
If you keep your eyes and heart open, you'll always find some reason to write one to somebody.
And we should always have special occasions in our life. We don't have enough of them.
Yes.
So we can make our own.
Oh, it is one. I mean, you get to bathe in the positive. You get to do so much. And when you think about it, like you just did before, mm-hmm. when you're cleaning out some old drawers, you're going to find one.
Oh, yes.
You're going to find something that just makes your heart sing because somebody wrote it by hand and left it to you.
Right.
Well, thank you, dear. Okay, until next time, goodbye.